two MLU insiders.
They feel like they can, but it's one of those things that why wouldn't they?
You hard analysis of everything that happens on the field.
This team is very, 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 very good.
This is the John and Greg Show.
John Phillips here with episode 10 of the John and Greg Show. It feels like we've been on the air for 10 years, Greg.
A little bit, because I'm getting that tired of you.
You know, I've lived with myself for 22 years, and I was tired with myself since I was like 5, so that makes sense.
Understandable. You're pretty awful.
I am, but the Frisbee this weekend...
Was not.
At least on the East Coast.
Both coasts had entertaining games.
Just feel bad for the Dogfish.
I do, too. I mean, schedule is very difficult.
And they're sinking quickly. What you said earlier was good.
Yeah.
Rather than being fried.
You can cook them up, serve them with the side of butter and a lemon glaze, and they're done because the fish are fried.
Right. I like that a lot. So
really just an unfortunate scheduling scenario for them where their two road trips happen so close together. And they're also, for both of them, missing a large chunk of their roster. And they took a big hit, missing Evan Boucher last-minute scratch for the weekend's games. And at that moment, you knew it was not going to end well for them. But they fought pretty hard in these games, and we'll get into that.
Yeah, but, you know, the big news of the weekend is...
The king is dead again.
And, you know, you weren't right week one that New York was going to win that game.
I have picked the exact correct record for the New York Rumble. I have just not picked a single one of their games correctly.
Which is really impressive when you think about it. The odds of you getting all of their games
wrong. It's almost as impressive as getting all the games right. I have the same record. And I picked, you know, I picked them to beat Philly. I picked them to beat Boston. And I picked them to lose to Philly and lose to Boston. So I just have the weeks mixed up. I must have been looking at the wrong schedule.
So it's a huge change with not only DC taking down Boston, but now New York also joining the ranks of, you know, teams in the East who've beaten Boston. So only Philly's left hanging.
Yeah, and they get their shot this week.
Right. So, you know, you were up there.
I was.
Weather game, you know, a little lightning delay, just odd circumstances. You know, you're on a rooftop. You know, all the scene setting that you need cinematically to make for what was going to be a big upset.
It was almost as if lightning struck the Eastern Conference at that moment, and everything was thrown for a loop. We'll get into it in a little bit, but this is a seismic shift of power in the East, or at least of the outlook going forward. I mean, this game changes everything that we thought about the East.
So we had that, which was big, and we'll get in that in a minute. Down in D.C., you know, I was there for, you know, a game that was well played for three quarters by Philly, and then that a third quarter.
Inconsistencies have been killing them all season and will continue to make it difficult for them to win. But they have some reinforcements coming soon, which I'm sure they'll be very happy to get.
Yeah, they'll be ecstatic. That was a big point of conversation on the bus ride back to Philly. And, you know, we'll also have Coach Anthony Nunez.
Yes, he joins us this week. He's been begging us to come on, and we're excited to have him.
What better week to have him on than this one?
Yeah, we're kind of just waiting for the right time to get Anthony involved in the show.
And we'll finally be able to do that today. We'll talk to him about New York's big win.
And then we'll preview week five's three-game slate.
A little bit shorter.
So, you know, you get this... Make a easy weekend for me work wise, so I'm happy about that. I'm always happy on these light game weekends because I only have, you know, three games that I have to worry about getting footage for. So this is a nice little mid season. I wouldn't say week off, but a little bit of a break from the, you know, the four game weeks, which can be a little rough sometimes. You get we handle two live stream games and two tape delay games every week, one on each coast. And yeah, that's a lot to organize for we have a very dedicated but small staff in the video department.
Right.
You know, we pull a lot of weight. We pull a lot of weight with it. So we'll preview those games for you, and that'll be after our interview with Anthony. But first, let us dive right into the biggest game of the season so far, the biggest result of the season.
I think that's fair to say.
You know, Boston goes into D.C. a little shorthanded, not very shorthanded. They had most of the players that you'd want to have in a game like that. Missing a couple guys on defense, but, you know, offensively intact. They had, you know, they didn't have to make big shifts in their roster like they did this week. And they go down there and they get beat by the current on a last-second Hail Mary hammer from Peter Pryl as the clock expires and the crowd goes crazy. And, you know, that's kind of how you expected them to lose their first game. It would be kind of fluky, a little bit of a crazy play has to happen. Some things have to bounce one way. A team has to stay in the game until the end to give themselves a chance to make that play. This game was completely different. New York should have won this game by more.
Right.
They completely outplayed Boston. They beat them in every single facet of the game and had a 4-point lead at a certain point in the fourth or in the third quarter and the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Incredible performance by them.
Yeah, and it comes on, you know, the back of a Boston win against DC, you know, a week after their first loss in the MLU. It was kind of asserting their, you know, the Whitecaps' dominance.
And yeah, kind of saying we're still the king.
But they go on the road this week and
where everyone's had trouble. Only two teams have had road wins in the MLU, and it's Portland and DC, and look where they are. They're at the top of the standings in their respective conferences.
You and I disagree on who should be at the top of the power rankings, but that's it's a conversation for
another day. We'll talk about that. You know, we can get into that a little bit later in the show, but let's focus on this game now. Yeah.
So a big point is that you're looking through, you know, your game notes, and pretty much everyone for New York showed up.
Yeah. They had their big players, their leaders, basically go out on the field and say, we're not losing today. And Joe Smash played an outstanding game defensively. He was an impact player every time he was on the field. You know, he guarded Brandon Malachek the whole game, denied a lot of huck opportunities for him, made them play a little more conservative. Chris Mazur, he's back. I mean, this was what we've been waiting for. He played like a man possessed. He was the leader in every way offensively for them, and he even made some nice defensive plays. Just complete performance from Chris Mazur. And he had an almost catch streaking down the sideline that would have been the play of the year if he had held on. But, you know, he still ends up with 8 points in the game, and they scored on that possession later. So just complete performance from him. David Vukovic played outstanding. Jack Marsh was this is the best game he's played. Robbie Gillies was great. And the big thing for me that is going a little unnoticed with the performance of Chris Mazur is Lucas Murphy on offense. That was the most effective he's been in 2 years with the New York Rumble.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Coach Anthony Nunez, he's been working the last couple weeks just to play around with guys on O, trying to figure out a way to really jumpstart this offense.
His spacing and his chemistry was so much better than they've had with Andrew Bosco and Michael Hennessy on offense. Michael Hennessy's been very good, particularly down the field, but his spacing has left a little to be desired in the first three games, and I thought Lucas Murphy played the position excellently, and he was not clogging. He was where he was supposed to be. He made smart throws, smart plays, and he was an impact player on offense.
Bosco being out of there is smart.
I would agree.
It's a necessary move, and I think that Nunez had Miles Snyder slated last week to step in on O. He fell down with an injury. Murphy steps in this week as that replacement guy that let's see how it goes, and it was successful.
When Miles Snyder comes back from injury, provided he does, I don't think we know the extent of the injury yet. I don't think it's too serious.
No.
Or else we would have heard a little bit more about it.
Yeah.
But when he gets back in the lineup, that's an impact player. And I'm going to be interested to see where Anthony puts him, given the success Lucas Murphy had this week. But let's move on a little bit. Let's talk about some of the shocking numbers in this game.
Yeah, because there are a lot of them.
First of all, Danny Clark, before we start the Boston bashing, let's just say that Danny Clark was outstanding. He's coming down with discs that a man his age should not be coming down with. He and Jeff Graham had outstanding games. Graham, again, with, you know, 6 points, which seems like an off day for him now.
Because
of the way he's played.
It's ho-hum.
Yeah. And he's also a little hurt, a little hobbled by, I think, a knee injury or a leg injury.
So, which we saw around this time last season with his hamstring.
They were very good. He had a couple of unforced errors that kind of cost them. Jeff Graham did, but yeah, when you give your team 6 goals and a couple of the plays that he gave them,
can't complain.
You can't complain. He was fine. He was not the problem. Here's the numbers that jump out at me. Boston 2 of 10 on break opportunities, 20%. When you're a team that expects to go undefeated or go 8-2 or go 9-1, something like that, you can't be 20% on break opportunities. New York, not too much better, 4 of 10, 40%, but that's twice as good as 2 of 10.
It's twice as good, and those two numbers, they mean different things because of the result of the match. You know, Boston, that's unacceptable for them. New York, that 4 out of 10 just means that they could have won by more.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's closer to 50%, which is sort of the target range that will, you know.
Yeah.
Let's make that our benchmark. About 50% is an acceptable break conversion rate. If you have a lot more than that, that's fantastic. If you're under that, not so good. 4 of 10, 40%, not something crazy to worry about. Means you had opportunities to score. But Boston, 2 of 10, unacceptable. You can't expect to win if you get 2 of 10 on break opportunities.
Absolutely not.
And they're coming, you know, they had one, I think, in the first quarter and one at the end of the game in the fourth quarter. When they were trying to make that comeback. They really thrived on what I term as the free break, where you score to end the quarter, or you make the last score of the quarter and then receive to start the next quarter.
Yeah.
So that helped them a little bit because their defense was ineffective on scoring. The big problem for them that I noticed, John, New York, 7 of 13 on hooks.
Yeah.
DC did the same thing to them where they just said, we're going to go play you deep and, you know, we trust our guys to make the plays.
Right.
And why wouldn't you right now? Boston is struggling with the deep defense.
It's something that with DC you can write off just as that's the way that they play. But you had a feeling, especially I did, you know, you look at who Boston brings down, you know, on these road trips week to week, and it seems that they're always missing a few of those defensive guys. But I think it's less about exactly who they're missing and more just about who they didn't bring back for this, who they weren't able to bring back for year two in terms of, you know, these defenders who are able to handle those deep shots.
Well, Will Neff is not with the team this year, which is, you know, he was kind of their guy on the deep ball last year. He was really an impact player that way, as was Seth Reinhart, who is on the roster but has been injured all year. So that's an impact player missing for them on defense.
And then Teddy Bruwer-Jarrus also.
Usually the guy who on defense takes care of the, you know, cleans up the mess downfield. He's had a number of plays where he's, you know, knocked down potential goals. He's on offense this game, so there's really not anybody. Jack Hatchett's supposed to be doing it. He had one D on David Vukovic, but that wasn't really a sky D. That was kind of a lower one. He kind of goes around Vukovic.
And it's in the air. It's the problem in the air.
They're just not doing, I mean, on offense, they're fantastic. They have Danny Clark going deep. They got Jeff Graham going deep. They're great on offense. You flip them over to defense, and that's where they've been having some trouble. That's where they're vulnerable. And right now, the big thing for me is the Boston aura is gone. Yep. They're no longer the best team in the East by any statistical measurement other than reputation, and I don't think any of these teams are afraid of that anymore. You know, teams think they can beat them.
Even Philly, I asked those guys, you know, on the ride back, you know, after that loss, you know, if they felt that they could go up to Boston. And of course they feel like they can, but it's one of those things that, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they feel like they can go and beat this team?
You know, who's going to guard Matt Esser? Who's going to guard Jake Rainwater? Who's going to guard Art Schull going deep?
Right. And so Boston is no longer, you know, clearly the number one team in this league.
The biggest thing that they had going for them was that teams were kind of, you know, they would put on a pedestal, and teams would kind of play a little scared.
Sure.
Kind of press a little bit, trying to be perfect. The biggest problem for Boston right now is that they are losing games, and they are not playing poorly. They were only missing two really key players that they've had the rest of the season. They were missing Josh Marquette, who's one of the best players in the league,
yes,
and Matt Rebholz, who's been pretty good for them.
Yeah.
They made a big deal about him coming in, and he's been good. I wouldn't say that he's been...
He wasn't, you know, the reason that they
lost. No, he was not the
game.
Reason that this team was winning. He's not the reason. He's a good player. Actually, he's a great player. But he's not the guy who he's not the key cog. No, he's not Josh Marquette for them.
Right. And or on Jeff offense, Grant. On offense, it doesn't matter for them really without and, you know, Graham.
The key Marquette. Point is if you're one or two guys down, you shouldn't lose by this much. Any other team, one or two guys down, you know, this is a team game more than this is not an individual game.
Sure.
So, you know, you can't make the excuse, oh, we're down this guy. So you can't be, you know, the team that thinks they're going to go undefeated
right.
if, you know, minus one or two guys. You're playing like this, and you're getting beat handily by a New York team. This says it was a 1-point game. The score says it's a 1-point game. This was not a 1-point game.
No.
The score is very misleading for this game because New York outplayed the crap out of Boston.
Right.
They beat them in every facet of the game. They beat them defensively. They beat them offensively. They beat them in the air. They played a cleaner game. They played a smarter game.
It'll be interesting to see this week DC and New York finally meet up. Yeah. So
this was the way. Just to tout New York real quick, this was the game that we thought that they could play.
Yeah,
this is the potential has come together, and this is what we thought we had in New York.
Right.
So they're right back in it. This was a team that needed a win desperately against the best team in the league, or what we had penned last week as the best team in the league, and now you're tied with them for second, and you're right back in the race. You were going to go to D.C. this week for a huge game, and if you win that one, boy, is everything. You throw everything we knew out the window.
Yeah, just a great win. So, you know, their rivals, the guys that are now atop the Eastern Conference in D.C., you know, Philly went down, took on the Current, and after a poor third quarter from the Spinners, in which the offense kind of just stopped working, essentially, you know, they fell out of it. Played a strong fourth, but it doesn't matter. And that's kind of been their calling card this season.
Just inconsistency. They're so talented. They're so close to being able to beat these teams. They're so close to, you know, if they played just a little bit better, they'd be up there in first place.
Oh, yeah.
They've had a chance to win every game that they've played in. And they had no business coming back in this game. DC, pox
not.
On you for this is letting one. Them come back. But
right.
Kudos to Philly for coming back, especially without, you know, Matt Asser playing much of a role at all. So I'm just confused about some of the coaching decisions, some of the offensive strategy that they have going on right now. I don't see a lot of it. I see them having, you know, running a failed in cut that is, you know, either cut off by another cutter or just not a clean cut, not getting close enough to the thrower. Whatever it is, their in cuts are few and far between, and they're having to move it through the handlers, which I know they like to do, and then they're just shooting deep off of stop discs a lot, and, you know, they live and die by the huck a lot. 11 of 18 this week, John.
Which
18 is the most hucks I think I've recorded in any of the games since I've been recording the hucks.
Which is and funny to see from a team that last year was very hesitant in terms of the chances that they would take. But I think that you're right. And this is probably the contest where they deserve to win the least of the 4 weeks. I didn't think that the Current outplayed them that by this much in week one, and I don't think either New York games were this, you know, the team that ended up coming out on top was clearly the one that should have won. Because DC, if you have a dominant third quarter like that, if you dominate 10 minutes of a contest, you're gonna win you're gonna take it, and they did. But it leaves a dry taste in your mouth because how athletic this Philly team is.
Yeah, how well they can play, like they played in the first couple quarters without, you know, really any consistent offense, and then how poorly they can play in the third.
So Sheridan for Philly as one of those cutters, he falls down with a knee injury, I believe, in the second. And he was limited in that third quarter. Maroon, you know, Philly's coach, looking for reasons why. He pointed to Sheridan's injury as one of those reasons why that offense seemed to stall. I don't know whether,
well,
you know.
They looked fantastic in the fourth quarter, though.
I think that the reason that they looked so fantastic, I mean, firstly, you can say what you want about how Michael Penn is playing. I know that you're not happy with it.
His Callahan was terrific, though.
His Callahan
was a huge
terrific
moment for them.
And that is the type of, you know, energy that he brings. And in the fourth, you know, the bus driver asked Billy when they were getting on the bus, like, what he said to the team going from the third to the fourth quarters. And he said it had nothing to do with me. You know, that was the guys in the huddle. And, you know, Panna had that energy that I think that they need to play with from the start of the game.
He's a strong leader, and they respect him a lot.
Right, and especially coming out of half, they have to do something differently because it's become a trend that they're not able to succeed in those.
They're constantly in games, and then they get out of games, and they have to make these crazy comebacks at the end,
which they're capable of, and it shows like what they can do, which is, just makes it all the more frustrating.
Well, they've got some reinforcements coming soon, so you know when the Pitt kids show up, especially Marcus Rainey Dropcho, who is phenomenal.
Watch his Callahan video.
Him and Max Thorne are going to make a huge difference for them. I hope that they can find some type of offense
by them
that looks more like what's going on in Portland, where we've seen a team that's incredibly talented finally bring it all together in an offensive system that makes all of them better. I mean, particularly Jeremy Norton and Eli Friedman, who we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah. So we're kind of left with questions for Philly. For DC, this is the type of game that they felt like they should win.
Win by more.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have let Philly back in the game. But kudos to a couple guys who had outstanding games. Peter Pryle coming back.
Yeah. After not being there up in Boston.
And Sean Keegan. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
What a game from him. Just, that's what you need from your captain coming back.
All over the place. And one of those guys that Philly, you only have so many pieces that you can put on certain players. And Keegan was that guy in this game that was able to take advantage and run all over the spinners.
Yep. Markham Schaffner also had a strong game. You know, high turnovers, but that's his style.
It is.
So we'll move on to the West Coast, where, you know, we had two good games. One similar to the DC game, and one kind of just, you know, what we sort of expected from Portland.
Portland has a system that they are able to run.
They trust it. They trust the system, which is why when San Francisco makes this comeback in this game and gets themselves back into it, they're not worried.
Right.
They continue to play their system, and they continue to get wins. And it's just really, really great to watch. And it's why I think, you know, they've got three wins now. They're 3-0. And they have had, you know, every game has been sort of one where it's a game of momentum shifts where, you know, Portland has to overcome something to get the win, and they've done it every time. Either they have to, we've seen them stage a large comeback after trailing the whole game and win in overtime.
Yeah.
We've seen them withstand, you know, a very well-played game by Vancouver in week one. And now we've seen them get a big lead, lose a big lead, and then build back up again. So I've seen a lot of complete performances from them, and I think it's actually not complete performances. That's not the word. I've seen them
win in a lot of different ways.
I've seen them overcome a lot of adversity.
Sure.
Particularly that nobody thinks they're any good.
Yeah.
And I think it has a lot to do with the system that they trust, and they know that if we keep playing like this, we're going to be successful.
And that's one of the big things with the Stags is that last year you just looked at all those names. And I know that, you know, you've been really wowed by Eli Friedman. And he's the type of player that last year you watch him and
you wondered last year how he won a Callahan Award.
Right. You're asking, like, why am I not seeing this guy leap off the screen at me?
Exactly.
But now the system is highlighting the guys in the best way on offense.
Eli Friedman and Jeremy Norton, John, they both have more touches than Alan Kolick. And they play on the same team. That's a really interesting stat.
And if you've ever watched DC, their offense.
Now, that may not be true through four games. It was true through three.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think the stats have been officially published from the Philly game. But through three games, they both had, I think, at least 10 more touches than Alan Kolick, which is impressive considering, you know, how Alan Kolick dominates a disc for them.
And which he did all day long.
But John, I want to read some stats from this game because
some of these stats kind of tell the story.
I mean, San Francisco, their defense on offense was excellent. 6 of 7 on break opportunities. It's maybe the highest percentage I've recorded since I've been recording these. they just only had 7 break opportunities to compare with Portland, who had 10 breaks, John, on 16 attempts. 16 break chances, 10 scores. And I think a couple of these were actually end of quarter, you know, miracle hucks that just don't go in.
16 is just ridiculous.
And they were 10 of 13 on hucks, John. Portland, 10 of 13 on throws down the field. That's incredible. This team is very, 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 very good, and people need to stop thinking they're not.
Stop thinking that it's going to, you know, they're going to go and play Seattle, and Seattle's going to wipe the floor with them.
Yeah.
At the very worst, it's going to be a battle.
I can't wait to see that game.
And if Portland runs away with it, I would not be surprised.
Right. I mean, Seattle is, I think, playing very, very well, and they have a very strong team. But this Portland team, to me, is just so impressive in just their attitude. Mark Burton, after the game, I tweeted at him and said, I can't wait to watch the game. Congrats on the win. You know, you guys may be the best team in the West. And he says, thanks you for, you know, we're very happy with the win, but we're not happy with the way we played. And I watched the game. I was like, I thought they played pretty good. And right. to see him not be impressed by the way that they played, that's, you know, that it's tells me mentality. A lot about, it's that Boston-like mentality from last year where they're not satisfied with playing well. They want to play great. They want to play unbeatable.
Absolutely. And on the flip side of
this
the coin,
is a team, by the way, that has Timmy Person coming back at some point this season. Yep. We assume Timmy Person will come back to the team.
In time for the playoffs.
Wow. After they've gelled, they've got this system going, and then you're going to add a guy like that.
It's awesome. I'd be scared.
He's the ultimate player that you can plug into any team, and he'll be successful. Because he just knows how to get open in the end zone.
Yeah. And that's what they would ask him to do. On the flip side of the coin, San Francisco, this is one that they needed, because knowing that they're going to have to go and play a game.
The outlook was terrifying for them going to, I mean, I think they were down 12 players, many of them starters. It's tough to, and then you see Evan Boucher, a last minute scratch. That's not helpful.
So move on to,
well, just before we move on, I want to give some shout outs to some guys who actually have played well on San Francisco. Sam Adamson had himself a weekend, and I think long term is where San Francisco has to be looking right now, you know, going forward into the future. Maybe even if they can't get back some of these guys that they lost from season one's team, you've got some players here that I think you can build off of, with Sam Adamson, who's played outstanding this season when he's had the opportunities. I think you've got a guy in Dan Bellinger who can fit into a system. I don't think he's played particularly well the last couple of weeks, but I think his week one performance shows you that he can be a guy who's fills in that first handler off the bench on a really good team.
Yeah.
And I think Corey Lee has played well. The guy we haven't really talked too much about, he's the only player in the MLU to play in both conferences, was a member of the New York Rumble last year. Taylor Cassino has actually been a bit of a disappointment to me. I think he's played okay, but I've heard big things about him coming into the season. Then you go over to the Portland side and look at some guys who have had outstanding seasons. Jeremy Norton, who I was very hard on last year. I thought he was terrible. I thought he had a terrible, terrible year last year.
And he's turned it around.
He's played very well. He's high turnover style, a little like Markham Schaffner. But the guy puts up numbers and
impact plays.
He's very impact. He touches the disc so much, you're going to expect him to have turnovers.
Yeah.
He and Eli Friedman have developed a very strong chemistry on the field, and Friedman obviously has been, I think, the best player in the Western Conference. He does everything on offense for them, particularly in the absence of Purston.
And it's about time.
Yeah. Also, Drew Kim coming back this week in San Francisco showed us why he's a big deal for them. He played very well.
Yeah.
He does a lot for that team. He's a little bit of the Eli Friedman light over there. He does a lot of different things for that team.
So they moved down to Seattle. Down to Seattle? Yeah.
Up to Seattle.
My West Coast geography is weak. And, you know, pretty much the same deal for San Francisco. The same notes can be hit. For Seattle, I don't know if we necessarily learned a lot, you know, strategy-wise, but we did see something character-wise from the fact that they were up 12-3 and things kind of started to disintegrate.
This looked a lot like the second half in Vancouver for San Francisco, except it happened in the first quarter and the second quarter. it just compounding of mistakes, and Seattle capitalizing with outstanding players like Danny Tridiak, Donnie Clark, all had great games. Eddie Feeley has come along pretty well this year. And a guy I'm really impressed with on their team, Henry Fan, young kid out of the Seattle high school scene, has had, you know, he's getting better every week. And Khalif Al-Salam actually quiet this week. I don't think he had a point, but you know, he's been great for them. This first half from them is great. They put together an incredible first half that tells you, you know, at the end of this first half, I was ready to say this is definitively the second best team in the Western Conference, mm-hmm. if not the best. And then the third quarter happened, where there's drops and drops and silly turns and bad throws, and you let a team that you were up 9 on come back and almost win the game.
Which should not happen.
Inexcusable.
You shouldn't get within, let that team get within 4.
No, I would even, I'd go, you sh- they shouldn't get within 5, they shouldn't even get within 6. You should really continue to just bury them, because it's not like San Francisco had a great second half. It's not like they did anything particularly different.
Right.
You know, they played cleaner, they played better, give them credit for that, but Seattle just was handing them the disc, saying, here, go score. It, you can't have that happen if you want to beat Portland, if you want to beat, you know, a team potentially in the championship, one of these East Coast teams. I think Chris Mazin put it the best. The East Coast right now is the Beast Coast. All these teams are beating each other up.
Yep.
It's real fun to watch. The West, we're still trying to kind of figure out what Vancouver is, how good exactly is Portland, how consistent can Seattle be,
right.
And is San Francisco really this bad?
Yeah, still a lot of question marks in the West for sure. So we'll move into... Unless you have anything.
Yeah, I think that wraps up our recap for this week. So we're going to move into our interview with Anthony Nunez, head coach of the New York Rumble.
And so we have Coach Anthony Nunez of the New York Rumble on with us now.
Our first coach interview, John.
Yeah, first coach interview. And I'm excited about it. So how are you doing, Anthony?
Good, good. I'm actually pretty excited about this, too. I've always been told that I have a face for podcasts, so.
Which is different than having a face for radio, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
The same thing?
No, in the modern age. I don't know if it's worse. I think it's different, though.
Well, Paul Scheer has a podcast, so if you have anything like that.
Very true.
It's more of a digital image, so
yeah,
it's fine.
So, last week, you know, I know that you tried to have Miles Snyder come in and play O so you can move Mazin to D against Philly. That didn't work out after he felt injured. This week, you know, your genius move was to move Lucas Murphy onto O, and this week it paid off. So could you talk a little bit about that decision and why it paid off so well?
And also plans for Lucas moving forward.
Yeah.
Sure. So Lucas is going to be staying with the O-line for sure. He's been a consistent guy who can move the disc very well. Last year we had him on the D-line. When Milo got injured, he became like our number one handler on the D-line. This year our D-line is so jam-packed with talent that we went into getting Lucas and moving him to the offense to help the flow of the offense move a little bit. Plus, I honestly, we just had way too many lefties on that D line, so we had to move them over. And I'm sure, you know, that as you can see, like it paid off against Boston, and I'm sure it's going to pay off against DC as well.
So, I asked you about. I'm trying to figure out what's going on with my audio, but it's okay. Fighting through it. With Ben, Chris, and Smash, so Ben Faust, Chris Mazur, and Joe Anderson, three guys who were impact players last year and had a big role in getting you guys to that Week 10 game to get into the playoffs. They came together and really showed what it meant to be not just be a part of, you know, a team in the MLU, but what it took to, you know, win a game like that. So can you talk about their impact? I know that Chris finally, we felt like that was his return party. You know, he came back from his trip away from, you know, Australia or some faraway place.
Wherever the real Chris Mazur was for the first 3 weeks of the season, he came back in big fashion this week.
Well, yeah. I mean, the three of them combined equal amazing leadership for the team. I don't know. Chris is a very... humble type of a person.
The most humble person I've ever met.
Yeah, okay. He's possibly the most humble MVP I've ever met for any sport. But, you know, he is somebody who last year had a rough first three games. And then in the fourth game, I guess that was against – technically it was against Philly. He just exploded for, like, seven goals, I think it was, or something like that.
I remember that game. Yeah, he was all over the place.
Exactly. And so, like, you know, Chris started out a little slow this year, and he got his bearings. He was able to figure out what he needed to figure out. Plus, like, while he has some chemistry with the guys on O from Pony and things like that, it was a lot of still trying to figure out, like, just the different systems and working with the team a little bit differently. And that obviously was something big for us against Boston. Then, as far as Ben and Joe goes, I don't know if you guys have been looking at the numbers, but Joe Anderson has been crushing it this year.
I absolutely agree. I've been very impressed with Joe Smash so far this season. He's probably been the most consistent player on defense of any team in the league so far.
Yeah, I mean, he's a shutdown guy. He doesn't have the easy matchups either. It's, no. He's taking on these, like, hard matchups. Like, he was taking on Brennan Malachek, Muffin, for Boston. He's the guy who takes Muffin, basically. And in Philly, you know, he's got those hard matchups that he has to take on. And he just dominates. His guy doesn't really do as much as they usually do in other games. And it shows because he's got something like six blocks. He's got like three assists, two goals.
Greg's saying he might have nine blocks.
That's the stat that I heard, nine blocks.
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility that he has nine blocks. I mean, the only person who might have more blocks on our team than him is Quinn, and that's just because Quinn's a freak of nature as far as, like, athleticism.
He has also been excellent on the defensive end of defense, offensive end. He's had his issues, as I'm sure has been well documented by commentators and everyone else, but defensively he's been very strong.
Well, the commentators kind of pick on him a little bit. Like, if you look at the situations that he gets put into, like, they kind of ribbed him a little bit for the first point against Boston that he threw out the back of the end zone. But if you look at it, there was like five guys around him, and it was interesting that he was even able to find a space to put the disc in.
Yeah,
right.
So it's not just Quinn's decisions as much as it is just like the chemistry wasn't there yet. And I think Quinn is fine. He's going to be awesome. He's going to be perfect in the later months as he's starting to get used to being that guy, the dude, the man on the field. I have no worries about Quinn. I mean, Peyton Manning led the league in throws and interceptions his rookie year. I mean,
right.
I would take it.
Him and Banerjee, how important do you think their role? I mean, all those young guys, all the new guys that you brought on, how important is their role? If you guys are going to make a run into the playoffs,
everybody's role is extremely important. Like, each point that somebody plays is a point that we need. So, you know, we're gonna use our depth and we're gonna keep going harder. I'm not gonna say too much, but we might have a surprise this weekend of a new signing possibly playing. And I'm definitely excited for this one too.
Breaking a little news.
Yeah,
I'm excited now. So you guys took down Boston. We just got done talking about how their aura is kind of gone after two losses. You could kind of lie to yourself after the DC loss that they're still at top, you know, atop the East. You can't really say that anymore. So what weaknesses do you see in the Whitecaps team right now, and how are you able to exploit them?
I mean, okay, you say weaknesses, and like...
That's a strong word.
Yeah, and that they're not the same team as they were last year. They are actually, I feel like, a stronger team than last year. It's just that the DC, New York, and even Philly have gotten stronger, so they're not as intimidating. You know, there are some weaknesses. It doesn't help that Jeff Graham is hurt. It didn't help that they were missing Marquette against us, and even Rebels. Like, Matt... is like a fantastic player too. But this, the same thing is that they run a very good, strong system. It's just the quick adjustments that we needed to make to take advantage of it. The first game, we were kind of, I was expecting a similar system to last year. And I even watched like some of the Ironside games and focused on a lot of things. And truthfully, I overplanned for the game. And that's when I learned a lesson of you can't really overplan because you can't expect the same exact team to be on that field, especially with all the new faces that they have. They added a fantastic defender in Rusty, who I think might even be one of the best defenders in the league.
I agree with that.
And you just have to make the adjustments pretty much on the fly once you see it for the first time.
So you had some game film. You know, you talk about overplanning for that week one game. How valuable was that DC win over Boston to you as you game planned going into last week?
I mean, it was valuable in the sense that I could see what both DC and Boston were strong in and weak in. I you know, not to give too much of a strategy situation with it. It was helpful, but we didn't run the same strategy that DC ran.
Okay.
So it was definitely helpful though, because what it did was it showed my team and also my coaching staff that it's not hard to beat Boston. We just have to get past the aura of Boston.
And you finally have.
Yeah, I think now every team in the East knows that they can match up with Boston, at least athletically. And now it's a matter of execution and going out and doing it.
Right. I mean, every team here has the abilities to not just beat Boston, has the opportunity to beat everybody. Just it wasn't that each team got stronger. They honestly just reloaded, and their strategy changes and everything else. It was a learning experience last year. Now it's the time where everybody is just extremely excited, and they got the talented players, they've got the new strategies, they've got the whole learning curve is completely different. So it's definitely, having that experience last year, everybody's gotten a lot better.
So I know that after the first couple weeks, we especially, but you know, around the league, we kind of started doubting whether you especially and the team in general would be able to bring all of these pieces together because of such a tall task that it is. You had so many new faces.
And with time kind of running a little shorter, I mean, instead of 10 games now, it was down to 7 games.
So how did you personally and your team weather that scrutiny, and how do you keep on growing as a team, you know, moving towards the playoffs?
Well, you say we, but John, I listened to the podcast. You were saying that I was getting ready to figure it out, and then Greg decided that how many times are we going to say that he's going to figure it out? Well, Greg, I figured it out a while ago, okay? You know, honestly, that scrutiny and like everything else, it just fuels us. I've been coaching for years, and I've had bad associations with my name. I've had great associations with my name, and it just comes down to we understand the importance of winning early, but we also know that we have to stick with our system and just be all about ourselves. We don't really pay attention as much to everybody else and what they're doing. We're a very selfish group of, we're focusing on ourselves,
right?
And we're not going to let outside sources mess up our focus. And, you know, was I a little worried? Sure. I'm sure if we lost to Boston and then we lost to DC this weekend, you know, our general manager, Michelle, would probably have rethought the whole thing of signing me as the head coach. But, you know, we won against Boston. We're keeping ourselves alive in the playoffs, and we're definitely much stronger after that Philly loss. one of the things that I even said to the group after we lost to Philly was that I feel really sorry for Boston, because
you said that to me too.
I just we're hungry, we're angry, we've got a chip on our shoulder, and we have a lot to prove, because we won the battle of the off-season talent, and then we didn't produce it right away, and I think that's going to change now.
I always knew you'd get there, Anthony. I always knew.
Yeah, so you're jumping back onto that bandwagon, I see.
I am the captain of the bandwagon. I have been driving the bandwagon since we started this show. We started this show to start a bandwagon.
Right. So it should be the John, Greg, and New York Rumble bandwagon show, is what you're saying?
I have you to thank for keeping the bandwagon afloat, Anthony. So this was a big week for the bandwagon. I get to keep driving
really
for a little.
I actually hopefully the t-shirts that I'm making up sell really well, and we'll probably put them up on the New York Rumble one that just says Greg is the captain of the bandwagon.
Greg will buy 10.
I will buy one. Definitely.
If not more. So we'll get you out on this. You go down to D.C. That's a rivalry game, especially after the last two contests that you guys shared last season. What are you going to try and do to rally this team to keep up the momentum following that Boston win?
So what we're going to do is we're going to remind them that D.C. was the reason why we didn't make the playoffs last year. You know, we've got the momentum with the Boston win, but DC is a totally different team than Boston.
Right.
So we've got to stay focused on we don't like DC. They stopped us from making it to the playoffs last year. And it was a close matchup last year. And this year, with both teams reloading into such a talented group of people, it's even more on. Plus, the assistant coach for the current and I have a hidden rivalry, because our lives have crossed paths way too many times. Wilson Malinsky and I went to college together, actually, at William Patterson in New Jersey. And he actually lived in the same dorm room that I lived in a year after me.
Huh.
Then he coached YHB while I was coaching Columbia High School. So we saw each other a lot then. And then last year, we were both assistant coaches in the MLU. Now, you know, and then Kevin's a great coach, but I also consider Will to be almost like a co-head coach with Kevin. The two of them are very talented coaches, but I've got my rivalry with Will that I have to settle a little bit, because last year was the first two times that he's ever beaten me. So,
ooh,
wow.
Yeah.
Very small world in the MLU.
Yeah, exactly.
That ultimate community, keeping it always tight.
Right.
Well, I'll be down there doing play-by-play, Anthony. It'll be good to see you, and good luck in your preparation for the week. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Anthony.
Anytime, guys. I hope to talk to you guys again soon.
So we just got done with a nice little conversation with Coach Anthony Nunez.
Yeah, and right before right after we hung up with him stopped recording for the interview, not hung up, we talked to him for a little while after the interview, but he wanted us to mention that he wants to give us a shout out to the Rutgers Rutgers Machine, who we saw in a preseason game against the New York Rumble, a team that Anthony formerly coached. They made college nationals this weekend. I think that's for the first time in school history.
I think so.
And this is also, John, by the way, the first team that I ever played against to go to nationals.
That's cool.
A college team, sorry.
Right.
And I should say also only Division I nationals, because I played against some teams at Division III regionals my sophomore year in Division III who went to nationals, obviously, because we played against all the teams in the regional tournament.
Right.
Also played against Marquez Brownlee at Stevens a couple times.
Oh. Nice guy. A lot of connections.
Good guy. What was real funny was there's a famous picture, not a famous picture, but a picture of our teams from Steakfest when he was on Stevens, obviously, and Matt Wilson was playing with us at Temple.
Right.
And there's a picture of Matt D-ing Marquez, and it's just funny, like a couple years later, actually like 1 year later, they're teammates on the Rumble. So
right.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah,
all right.
That's fine.
To our preview of the short week.
It's a short week, three games. We're going to roll through them.
one really high impact game. Actually, two really high impact games.
Two. I would say two. And one that's kind of a throwaway.
Let's start out west, where we have one game.
Yeah. So, Seattle.
This is our live stream game, by the way, because we can't live stream any other games from the west. This is also, John, the first, provided we succeed, this will be the first live stream in the MLU from Vancouver.
Right. Because for we some reason, some
there were some technical difficulties. No, there's technical difficulties with, you know, the border crossings that we had to figure out. It's true.
Hate illegally there are some going different... over to those borders.
No. It's not border. It's the internet systems operate slightly differently in Canada or something like that, where they don't, you know, the equipment that we can use in the U.S. doesn't always translate to Canada.
Right. So we're trying it out this week.
No, we've tested it already and it works. So there should be no problems. But I'm crossing my fingers, and it's going to be awesome because that's a great venue for a game, and they have great fans, and I'm really excited for their fans.
To finally get that recognition,
both in America and in Canada. I know they're one of the most followed teams around the our fandom, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that. I'm excited for Morgan, the good friend of the show, and all the other Nighthawks, Lugsden, everybody out there. I'm excited for them this week. So let's get into the game. Let's talk about what's going to happen on the field, and you can all watch it on the internet.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Modern age.
Yes.
Sitting on couches and watching Frisbee.
Yeah.
So Seattle...
Seattle playing well.
They took care of business this week.
I think I think they're missing players this week. The injury report obviously hasn't come out yet, but we know a little bit about the inactives. I don't think they have a full complement of players this week. And they're going up to a tough place to play. I like Vancouver in the game, John, because this is a team that is much in the same position as New York, where they have a game against a team they need to beat.
And a team that's not as good as the one that New York had to beat.
Correct.
So
Seattle playing very well, has a lot going for them. But I think Vancouver, kind of with their backs against the wall right now at 1-2, in danger of kind of falling back in the race in the West, a team that was predicted to win the West by many experts. Yeah, I think I picked them to win the West also. I went back and forth between San Francisco and Vancouver. Clearly, San Francisco, not a great choice.
No.
But Vancouver still has a shot. You know, they're three games into their season. This is a big week for them.
So Seattle, just in terms of technicalities, Seattle holds, what, one game?
Yeah, they played four games.
They played four, so this will be their fifth.
They have played four. San Francisco has played six. Portland has played three. They're off this week. This will be the fourth game for Vancouver. Seattle, the only team to consistently play a game a week so far in the West.
So they can move to 2-2. Vancouver can with
Vancouver,
a win.
Yeah, and push Seattle to 3-2.
Which tightens that up.
Very much.
Which puts a lot of pressure, like you said, on Vancouver in front of a crowd that's always awesome.
I believe this is the Flower Bowl game, John.
Is it?
I'm not 100% sure. I think it might be.
If it is, that
but
means...
they draw huge for that game.
They do.
At least they did last year.
Yeah, I'll be checking that. But in terms of that week off for Vancouver, how much that helped, I think that they needed it.
Yeah, they kind of needed to collect themselves after, you know, not... this is not the Flower Bowl game.
That'll be the seventh.
That's the seventh. I think we're also streaming the game that weekend. But this is... they lost a game that they didn't really expect to lose in Seattle in the border bid,
right.
The inaugural border bid. They need to win this game. They need to go and show Seattle that they are a competitive team in the West. They need to prove it to themselves the way that they proved it in week two when they thrashed the Dogfish.
Right.
They need to play like that. And I thought they actually played pretty well in their game against Seattle, but Seattle just converted so many more opportunities, and Seattle was just a little more consistent.
Right.
They need Brendan Wong to be huge, as he has been.
They need
Morgan Hibbert to play very well in defense, which he has. But they also need guys like John Norris to have great games. They need Kirk Savage to be solid, which he was in the last game. Yeah.
So they're coming off that loss to Seattle.
Yeah, they had guys playing well. They had the guys that they needed to play well playing well. But they need him to play a little bit better. They need more contributions from role players. They need Gagan Chatha to be better than he was in that game.
Right.
He wasn't really an impact player in the game.
And they need to shut down some of Seattle's guys. If I remember correctly, Khalif El-Salam had a big game.
Had a big game, yeah.
So he was important. Shutting him down will be one
of
those.
Their defense needs to come together after the turn. They're getting turns. Morgan's playing very well on defense. He's giving them turns. They need to convert on those opportunities. They need their defensive handlers to be playing well. They need their defensive cutters to catch the disc. And maybe, you know, maybe this is a time when you think of, you know, sliding some guys from O to D. Maybe Gagan Chatha plays a little bit of defense to have that threat down the field.
Right. Yeah, I see a Vancouver win in this case.
I'm pulling for it. I want there to be some competition in the West right now.
Yeah, and I think that with Portland not having lost yet, I think that, you know, the West tightening up, it's something that'll happen. And yeah. I think it starts this week. I see this being not too... First game wasn't too high scoring.
Was it a 22-17, I think was the score.
Right, so Seattle kind of ran away.
It in front of me, but it was a five-point win.
I think it's tighter this time. I think Vancouver runs away, you know, by three.
All right, okay. Yeah, I'm getting away from picking scores. I'm going to pick a margin.
Okay.
I think I like Vancouver by two. I think I like them in a tight game. I think they need to prove to themselves they can win a tight game, which they haven't done yet.
Right. Yeah, so that's the West. That's the only contest, but it'll be one that'll help us.
Yeah, it's a game to watch. It's an exciting game. So now we're going to move to the East.
Where we have
the non-live stream game, which we talked about with Anthony. It's the D.C. and New York game in D.C. This is a game that I have no read on. I'm feeling the home field in this game. But I've also never picked New York right on the show, so...
So whichever way you pick, just pick the other
home
way.
Teams, John, have two losses this year, so I'm going to go with the current at home.
It's a safe bet.
If this game was in New York, I'd be going with New York. At this point, I don't know which team is better. Because what New York team's going to show up? Is it week one New York that played like they'd never played together? Because they hadn't. Or is it week four New York that went and whooped on Boston?
Right.
And which DC team shows up? Is it DC from the fourth quarter of the Philly game, or is it DC from the third quarter of the Philly game, or the second and first quarters of the Philly game, or the Boston game? I think
DC has been more up and down than we think.
But when they're up, they're really up.
Oh, yeah. And so their fans can get them up.
I love the environment down there.
It's great.
I think DC wins this game. But going forward, I don't know that they're the better team. And I don't think that they're going to sweep the season series with New York. I think New York's going to continue to come together. I think this is a close game. I'm going to go DC by one, maybe overtime. I think this is.
I feel overtime.
This is going to be the classic matchup of this year.
I love these games.
This is the first time the two teams who've beaten Boston have played against each other. So
that'll be fun. And those games last year were so great. Man, you have to take DC just because of the home records thus far and that environment.
I feel bad because after the New York game, I went up to Chris Mazur, one of our good friends of the show, one of my favorite players in the league, and I said to him, hey, I could start picking you guys again because they finally won one against Boston, and now I'm going to pick against them.
Just purely
for home field advantage.
1 point at home is essentially a push.
Yeah. I'm just giving them home because this game's really a toss-up. You could go either way and be justified. I'm going DC because of home field advantage, and the way that home field advantage has carried itself through this season. But New York can make a huge statement with a win and be that third team to get a road win.
Right. And that would help them a lot in terms of bringing the East even more together and everyone beating up on each other.
Now let's move up to Boston, where I will be this weekend. You'll be in D.C. calling the game, and I'll be up in Boston covering the Philly-Boston game, which on surface level doesn't have a lot of flair. But with Boston, I don't want to say reeling, but kind of trying to – you know, reassert themselves as a dominant team. And I want to make one thing clear, John. We don't... this is still a very good team.
Yeah, let's
They're
not...
They're a very, very good
shoot,
team.
Go take Boston and out back and
I
shoot
think Anthony,
in the head.
I think Anthony said it the way it should be said. This is probably a better, more talented team than the Boston Whitecaps team from last year.
Which
was also very good. But it's just the rest of the conference has caught up a lot.
Which is great.
And has, you know... we pointed out their struggles... with the deep defense, And now you have a team in New York who can send you Robbie Gillies, Ben Faust, Sean Murray, Jack Marsh, and Markieff Cousinwitz all going deep, and those are all prime deep targets. You can't take all of them out of the game. They match up with the Boston deep defenders, and you go down to D.C., you've got guys like you've got Wodatch, you've got Keegan, you've got Eddie Peters. You got guys who can really play in the air.
Break Calvin out at
Ong,
any moment.
Calvin Ong, who played a tremendous role in that upset of Boston with that amazing Hail Mary catch. And you've got Peter Pryle. How can we forget about Peter Pryle?
Right.
So the matchups are just there now. Like, the teams believe that they can match up with Boston. They're not intimidated. They're not scared anymore. So I think Anthony put that the best way that we could. I mean, we've been trying to articulate, but I think that's the best way that you can say it, is that not that Boston's regressed, but that the rest of the conference has caught up a little bit more than we thought they would by this point.
But Philly is still a step behind DC.
The thing with Philly is I don't know what to make of them because they play so frenetically. So yeah. On surface level, this game doesn't have a ton of intrigue. But if you look a little bit deeper and you see, well, you know, Philly's been in every game that they've played. They've played two double overtime games. They've lost to DC twice by two. They're in games all the time. And they can send guys like Esser, Rainwater, Shaw all deep. These guys can give fits for those Boston defenders.
The problem is that two of those guys are playing D most of the time.
This is true. This is true. Fair point. But the difference now for Boston is, you know, you're probably going to be moving Teddy back to defense, which helps. We don't know about Seth Reinhardt. I haven't seen the injury report this week, as I've already said. But if he's back, that's a huge help for them.
Yeah.
So I think Philly could steal this one. I'm not going to predict it. But I think, you know, don't write this off as a Boston win yet. And if Philly comes up with the win, boy, do we throw everything we thought we knew about the East out the window. That would mean Boston loses three games in 4 weeks to each of their Eastern Conference opponents. And then the aura is – this is the one team they still have that kind of
– The monkeys on the back.
Yeah, the monkeys on the back of Philly. The monkeys off the other team's back. So
yeah.
Those games are going to be fantastic going down the stretch. This Philly team has a chance to – prove that they can hang in there, and if they get this win, you know, the playoffs are a reality for them. It's a real possibility.
And they know they need it.
They know they need this win. They know they have reinforcements coming. We don't know what that's going to do for them. We don't know how these guys are going to mesh, but, you know, shake things up sometimes and something crazy happens.
Right.
So their goal has all season been to stay in it until the full squad arrives.
Right.
And the full squad is coming soon. They really need to get one more win, and this would be a huge, huge week to do it, because you're going to knock Boston back down a peg. And every time Boston loses, John, this is something that we have to remember. Every time that Boston loses, the conference crunches together more.
Which is what failed to happen last year.
Yeah, last year you have a team that when you have a team that wins 10 of its 10 games, then, you know, everybody else's record is going to be worse.
Right.
So the conference records get scrunched together every time that Boston loses.
Right.
So, you know, if Boston gets down to three losses, then everybody's jumbled up. Everybody's at 2-3 or 3-2, or maybe DC's at 4-1. So you'll have sort of a pecking order if that occurs. But let's say New York wins. Let's say Philly wins. Now you've got two teams at the top at 3-2, two teams at the bottom at 2-3. And, you know, we're basically starting the season over again at midpoint. Right.
Yeah, I see Boston winning this, but I think that you're right that Philly, if they have magic in this season, it has to start here.
They're so unpredictable. You have no idea what they're going to do, because I don't think they know what they're going to do a lot of the time.
I agree. Which makes it really tough.
It makes them also difficult to prepare for. So maybe it's one of those like crazy like a fox type things.
Right.
they need it, and you know they could come out with a system that surprises us. Maybe this is the week they figure out what they want to do on offense. Maybe this is the week everything comes together. We don't know. But, you know, Boston's not Goliath anymore. I don't want to say just another team, but they're just a team now. They're not they're not the unbeatable team. They're just the very, very, very good Boston team. That's, you know, we're traveling up there. So I'm going to go with Boston. I think I'm going to go with them by four goals. But Philly's got a shot, which is something that we didn't think going into the season.
Right. All right, so let's wind down, move into the end of our show with review our deep shots real quick. Last week we were both on point with Mazur stepping up and having more than 6 points, I believe was the
word. And he certainly did.
Yeah, and then I forget what your
recall what mine was. Because you took mine, so I had to come up with something on the fly.
I think you were right, though. I think that we
I
were
have a feeling I was right. I have a feeling that I made
we'll
it.
We'll just say that Greg was right.
So someone out there, go back, listen to last week's show, and tell me if I was right or not.
Yeah. Just so
also, tell me what I predicted.
Yeah, just so that we can say that
John Greg was... John took the words out of my mouth with Mazur, and I was just so relieved to see him play well this week, because the league is better when Chris Mazur plays well. The New York Rumble are more fun to watch when he plays well.
Yeah.
And just Frisbee in general is more fun to watch when Chris Mazur plays well.
Yeah. You go first.
This week, my deep shot is that Brendan Wong will continue to dominate the league in terms of scoring.
How many points has he had every week, at least?
He's had at least 6 points every week.
Right.
I think he gets 9 this week.
Wow, big week.
But the potential to hit double digits. And if he hits double digits, I'll make another little video for him, because that's the benchmark for me to make a player highlight reel feature in the week. So all you players out there know, if you score 10 points, you will get your face on a little graphic in the corner with your goal counter, and I will put together all your points.
Which is always fun.
I did it for Timmy when he scored 10, and I'm going to do it for... I did it for Brendan when he scored 10, and if he scores 10 again, oh, I already have the graphic made.
My deep shot isn't the deepest shot in the world, but I'll take it anyway. I think that Kolek finishes the game against New York as the high assist man. And the reason why that's a deep shot is because last year when those teams met, Mazur, especially week 10, week 8 he was hurt, week 10 he was throwing assists left and right. And so I think that Kolek finally has one of those huge assist days that he has in him. A lot of the time he isn't the one who gets those assists because he just works it up.
I'd love to see a yardage stat on him.
Oh, that'd be great, because he just eats up yardage left and right. He killed Philly in that third quarter.
He would be the Adrian Peterson of the MLU. He would have so many yards.
And so many carries.
So many carries.
Right. It doesn't wear on him the same way that it wears on
Peterson. Yeah, he doesn't take quite the beating.
Right. But, yeah, so that's my deep shot.
And that's our show for the week, John.
Yeah, so.
And that is going to wrap up our 10th episode. We'll be back next week with midseason awards. We'll be halfway through the season,
which is crazy.
Wow!
So get excited! Yeah. Watch, check out the two live streams this weekend. They're sure to be a good time. That Philly Boston game is a sneaky one. You should check it out. Keep your eyes tuned.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as always, send us emails. Find us on Twitter. Send us your questions, thoughts. Make fun of Greg for picking the Rumble wrong every week.
I have the record right. I just have the weeks wrong. I'm glad Anthony doesn't know that. Although I think I told him in the press box after the game.
Yeah.
He came up to grab some of his stuff that he left up there. And I think I told him. I hope he doesn't remember. I'm sure he will now. He listens to the show every week, so I think I just reminded him that I haven't picked his team right.
I think you did.
So he's probably happy that I picked him to lose this week.
I would be too.
Yeah. So there was a funny tweet before the season from Chris Gebhard, who we go back and forth on Twitter with our Chelsea fandom.
Yes.
And Chelsea was losing a game, and he's like, do I have to beg Greg to change his week one picks?
Oh, I remember that.
And apparently, right. You should have, because every time I pick New York to do, they don't do.
Right. So we're looking forward to a good weekend of Ultimate. We'll be in two different places as per usual.
Because I can't stand to be with you for a game, John.
Exactly. It was too much in Philly.
It was too much.
Ugly game. It's because we were there.
When we're in the same place, the game doesn't look so good.
Right. So it's all because of us. So for everyone here at the MLU, I'm John Phillips.
I'm Greg Fallon. Thanks for listening.